from WBUR Boston and NPR. I'm Tom Asbrook, and this is On Point. The lords of e-tailing want to deliver you everything, even your food. It's not new. You may see Peapod trucks rumbling groceries up and down your street already. But now everyone seems to want in. Amazon, Google, Fresh Direct, Walmart, Instacart, and more all want to deliver your groceries. Even the U.S. Postal Service. This hour on Point, the other food truck, the one at your door, and the future of our food economy. We will talk later in this hour with a group out of Austin, Texas, that wants to deliver you straight from the farm organic food. And we will look at slumping sales for food and drink giants McDonald's and Coke. But first, to the same-day grocery delivery wars. With us from San Francisco is Marcus Wolson, senior editor for Wired. Marcus, welcome to On Point. Thanks for being here.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
You know, why is everybody suddenly all excited about delivering groceries? We remember, it seems like a decade or more ago, there were early players in the internet space went after this. We had big failures, Webvan, maybe others. What's got this hot again, Marcus?
Well, just like in those early days, there are a bunch of people who are looking at the retail landscape right now, seeing this huge sector where most of the shopping is still not done online. And they're saying, well, you know, we buy everything else online now. Why don't we buy and deliver groceries the same way? I mean, a few things have changed, you know, compared to the dot-com bubble days. For one, people are just accustomed to shopping online now in a way that they never were back then. It was sure. Such a novelty back then. Mm-hmm. And another thing that we've got now that makes a huge difference is mobile internet connections, phones and tablets, and you know, it makes the kind of, you know, impulse buying or wherever you are, you can shop possible, as opposed to having to go sit down in front of your computer and, you know, make a conscious decision to go grocery shopping.
The latest headline that got our attention was Amazon Fresh, they call it, moving out of its, early strongholds in Seattle and beyond, moving into New York, into Brooklyn specifically now. Walk us through the players here, if you would, Marcus, and who's doing what?
So Amazon is finally, it seems, making a play for grocery, which, you know, if you think about how long Amazon's been around now, 20 years,
yeah.
That's a long time in internet time.
Yes, it is.
So they're making a big gambit for same day delivery in particular, which is not something that Amazon has done a lot of otherwise either. You know, for Amazon, it's very much trying to recreate the Amazon experience, but for groceries. And again, in the cities where they are doing this, they are also trying to, you know, create a system where it shows up on your doorstep within a few hours sometimes of ordering it. The upstart in this space is a startup out of San Francisco called Instacart, and they're doing something a bit different. They're actually bringing you groceries from various brick-and-mortar grocery stores around the city, they're using an approach that has a little bit in common with companies like Uber, where you have folks that they call personal shoppers who are just sort of around the city, and when an order comes in, they get pinged on their app, and they actually go to the store and walk the aisles just like you would. As you mentioned at the top, Walmart is getting involved in this. They're using their own stores as a kind of warehouse where, when you place your orders, they have special employees whose job it is just walk up and down the aisles picking up the items. And then even Google is getting into this, which might sound a little weird. If you don't live in a city where Google is doing this, you think, well, they're a search company, aren't
right,
they?
Right, right.
They're also doing a sort of a peer-to-peer model in the sense that Google is not setting up big warehouses and holding inventory like Amazon does, which is, you know, the really expensive part of setting up any kind of e-commerce operation. They are
also working with local chain stores. And so when you order through Google, again, it's the model where somebody is essentially going shopping for you. And in every case, these are all same-day delivery outfits. So these are all the sort of tech companies now getting into grocery.
Let's get a little bit of the sound of that, how they're presenting this to the public. Here's an Amazon ad introducing Amazon Fresh, promising to deliver that range of fresh grocery food same day as the order. Of course, you've got to pay, $299 for a membership in Prime Fresh. Look at the background. But here's Amazon selling its grocery delivery.
Day and night, we bring the market to you. We've helped throw last-minute dinner parties, found the ingredient that puts the home in home cooking, even picked up your fish from the Pike Place Market, and delivered it all right to your doorstep. Amazon Fresh. Convenience. Delivered.
And now they're out of Seattle and into Southern California, Northern California, coming into Brooklyn, New York. Instacart, different model, not with big warehouses like Amazon, but just somebody Uber style, as Marcus Wolfson says, standing or maybe near the store. You put in your order, they hit the supermarket, put your stuff together, and I guess it's on its way to you. Here's an ad released earlier this year. They're partnered in part with Whole Foods, promoting this Instacart way.
They say that if you give a man a fish, he'll eat for a day. But what if he doesn't like to eat fish? If only there were a way for him to magically get a different kind of food within an hour or less. With our friends at Instacart, he'll eat whole foods for a lifetime.
A different kind of food. I don't know about that. Well, okay, it's Whole Foods. How different that is. Hey, Marcus, we say they're going to Brooklyn, but specifically they're going to Park Slope. This is a very Tony part of Brooklyn. Is this aimed at a kind of mass market grocery delivery, or is this maybe like it was in part 100 years ago? Is this for the sort of Tony crowd?
Well, as you say, the Amazon Prime Fresh membership is $299 a year, so it does sound a little steep. Although,
and what does that mean? Is the delivery free after that, or you pay? Or
Amazon specifically, they have a $35 minimum order.
Okay, that's easy. Whole Foods, that's barely a bite.
Exactly right. So, you know, honestly, though, no, I don't think that's ultimately the aim here. I think that the areas where they're trying this out, the different services, the different companies, you know, there's a lot of density there, so yep, that their drivers don't have to drive very far. A lot of these stores are in these zones. And you know, they tend to be sort of early adopter areas where people are very willing and eager to try out new sort of tech solutions to different things. But I think ultimately, no, it's quite the opposite, that all of these companies hope to make this as mass market as possible. The grocery industry, the retail sector, is something like $700 billion a year in the United States. So there's a huge amount of revenue to capture there. And especially for a company like Amazon or a company like Google even, I mean, these are not companies that sell groceries. So even capturing a small fraction of that, it means a lot of money for them. So I think that, given the proliferation of smartphones, especially, these are not tools that only the wealthy have, and the more widespread they can make the appeal of getting groceries delivered, the more successful they'll be.
And of course, if you do it Uber style, like Instacart, you can move in a hurry. They're in all kinds of places now: Atlanta, Austin, Boston, Boulder, Chicago, Denver, Houston. I mean, right on down: L.A. and New York and Philadelphia, San Jose, Seattle, Washington. Carol in Nashville, Tennessee. Carol, you're on the air. Thank you for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm somewhat chuckling over this because I'm old enough to remember my grandmother having her groceries delivered.
Yes.
I was a kid.
Yeah. It's so old-fashioned, and now it's all new and shiny.
That's right. She used to have her groceries delivered from Smithfield. So it's not like it's some sort of now it's some sort of new technology.
Right, coming around again.
But I would beg off of this. I mean, I could see where this would be convenient if I were sick, mm-hmm, shut in somehow. Mm-hmm. But the cost has just got to be enormous. And I sort of loathe having to engage in another online purchase where my credit card information is at risk or hacked or whatever.
Yeah.
What is the safety of this? And they haven't come to that kind of solution yet where you can really protect your financial information online.
Carol, let us grab that while we have a minute here. I mean, Marcus, there's security. People are very skeptical now. And there's also, do we really need one more thing that makes us sit in front of that darn screen and click boxes for an hour? I mean, I'd rather walk to the supermarket to squeeze the peaches and have some fun.
Well, that's the real question, isn't it? Is it which is really more convenient? And I think that grocery shopping is a little bit unique in that, you know, I could even order my toothpaste online, you know, much less, you know, a smartphone or something like that, because it's going to be the same thing. It's going to be the same tube of toothpaste regardless.
But, yeah.
For perishables in particular, I think people really like to have that experience, and it's going to be hard for these companies to change people's habits. You know, I think going to the grocery store is a kind of ritual for a lot of people. And just to the security point, I do think it's important to bear in mind that the biggest breaches so far have all happened with people using their cards at brick-and-mortar
stores. Carol, there's nowhere to hide. Marcus Wolfson, you've started us wonderfully here from Wired in San Francisco. Thank you for being with us, Marcus.
Thanks for having me, Tom.
This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about groceries and the accelerating push to deliver them all over fast, asking if this will be the end of the supermarket or not, asking if it could change big food or not. Of course, Peapod has been out there for a long time doing this. Here's one of their ads from back in 07.
Why do you Peapod?
I get my groceries delivered from Peapod because it's so easy.
And I save a lot of money.
I don't have time to go to the store.
I just go to Peapod.com.
Pick and click my favorite brands.
Will it change the food we eat? Maybe. A company called Fresh Direct has released a campaign of ads promoting their partnerships with local farms. In this ad, a produce team member talks about the relationship of Fresh Direct and the farmer, the producer.
I focus mainly on local buying, and every day I'm on the phone with all the farmers. And I come from a family of apple farmers, so they love talking to me and saying, you know what it's like, you grew up on a farm. The greatest benefit of buying direct from farmers is really having the upper hand on quality control, seeing firsthand what we're getting, talking with the growers. We really have eyes on the whole process.
Could just tap the same old distribution, could tap a whole new vein of food. Bob Black joins us right now from Dallas, Texas. He's a senior advisor to the Boston Consulting Group on digital commerce, sits on the board of directors of Annie's, Inc., serves as the director at Argo Tech, LLC, a couple of food groups right there. Bob Black, thank you very much for being with us today.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Is this really going to change the world, or is it just supermarkets with a little fringe of delivery around the edge?
It's definitely going to change the world. I think there are two things. One is it's going to change the world, but the world is not going to change as dramatically as being completely focused on no stores, no brick and mortar. What the change is that the store was the center of attention for shopping for everyone. And what's changing is the consumer is becoming the center. So instead of just simply going to the traditional store, you have the option to click and collect at a local store and browse the fresh section, or have subscription-based delivery or next-day delivery through Google Express or Amazon. You know, you have the opportunity to have a shared family shopping list, the ability to price compare. So really the center is moving from the store to you as an individual consumer.
Is it cheaper or more expensive? Delivery sounds like kind of a luxury.
Well, a lot of people think about it as a luxury, but at the end of the day, it's about time. You know, I look at a company like Domino's, right? You can buy the ingredients to make a pizza for roughly $2. You can buy a frozen pizza for, you know, $5 or $6. But if you try to order a pizza from Domino's, which everyone does, you know, you end up spending $12 or $13. So it isn't necessarily an issue of people not willing to spend a little bit more. They're willing to spend for convenience. And you see that across socioeconomic classes, across, you know, cultural classes as well.
Well, people are listening carefully here, listening about geography. Josh in Yukon, Oklahoma. Josh, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. My question is, I live in Oklahoma. It's a very rural state. And I believe, like, states like Utah, Wyoming, probably have the same question. Out here, there are some towns where the closest grocery retailer, like Walmart or any of the Costco's or stuff like that, is about 60 miles away.
Okay.
And a lot of them go shopping at the local gas station for just the minimal, you know, groceries that they need. I was wondering, where does this e-commerce grocery fit for the consumer that's way out of the reaches of Walmart?
I'll take
my comments offline.
Josh, great to have you there from Oklahoma. I don't know, Bob, is this where the Amazon drone comes in to fly Josh's groceries to him, or is a 60-mile drive just not going to be done by the delivery people?
Well, maybe in the long term, the drone might be there. But in the short term, you already have FedEx and UPS, which are delivering. The question has always been about delivery economics, both that and retraining the consumer. Delivery economics have clearly changed because you've got companies coming in to do it for reasons that aren't necessarily directly making money on delivery. For example, Google Express is really focused on capturing the consumer and the advertising that goes with the consumer. So you have people doing things that maybe are not traditional that are making the delivery economics a little better from an individual consumer standpoint. It will take some time, obviously, before that comes to some of the more rural geographies. But at the end of the day, there is some value to aggregating purchases for people from a number of different stores that are difficult for them to shop at.
And surprising players in here. I was surprised to see the United States Postal Service teaming up with Amazon on food delivery. Explain that for us. I just don't get that.
Well, the U.S. Postal Service has a fantastic delivery mechanism, right? They still are forced by law to have somebody come to your house 6 days a week.
Yeah, but they carry letters and catalogs. I mean, salami and heads of lettuce. How do they do that?
Well, nobody's really sending catalogs much anymore because people are shopping so much online. So it's great for them to be able to substitute something else that they can bring with an existing delivery fleet that's out there every day going to a central point and then reshipping back to an individual consumer every single day. So it's certainly an ability. What a lot of companies are trying to do is leverage other people's infrastructure.
And the Postal Service needs new business, and this might be part of it.
Absolutely.
Gosh, the mailman bringing a piping hot pizza or whatever it might be. Chris in Lake Mills, Wisconsin. Chris, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I live in a small town in central Wisconsin. We're only 4,000 people. We had a new store move in that's gluten-free, organic, and they try to buy meat and produce as much as local as possible. They're now doing grocery delivery for free. They'll pick everything for you and deliver it for free. So it's not just in the major cities.
Yeah.
There's small companies. This company's based out of Madison, but they're trying to do it. And they have access to all the other small towns around here, but we're trying.
Chris, I get it. The local is attractive, and the fresh from the farm is certainly attractive. What about price, Chris?
They're a little bit more expensive than Walmart, but you have to take the good with the bad. You have to look at what we're doing in these giant box stores and say, you know, am I willing to pay a couple, couple dimes extra, or am I, you know, because you still have to drive and waste the gas to get to the box stores.
Of course you do. Chris, I appreciate your call. Bob Black, is it possible that all this delivery could end up rejiggering distribution and even our food sourcing? A lot of Americans frustrated with big food and what it delivers to those supermarket shelves. Could this be a way around that?
Well, you're certainly going to see some significant reconfiguration of traditional stores. I mean, we have way too many stores. We have some really large stores. And as you start to move to this model, you need smaller stores and they need to be reconfigured inside the stores, more for a picking mechanism and collecting as opposed to necessarily shopping the entire store every single time. At the same time, you have a lot of people who now that there are some delivery services that are able to bypass that store, you're going to see more people going direct to consumers. And consumers are really interested in that. For example, as you mentioned, from the farm. It's now very easy as a farm to establish a website, to connect with various delivery vehicles and get your goods from your farm delivered directly to the consumer and bypass the store altogether.
Yeah. Let's go to Alec in Nashville, Tennessee. Alec, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I have more of an environmental concern. I once got Fresh Direct, and all of my produce was individually packaged
And I just felt so enormously guilty afterwards that I never did it again.
Because every baby carrot with its own plastic sheath or something.
Yeah, exactly. And I really feel like it's time for us to start being a little bit more concerned with things like that.
I wonder if it has to be that way. Alec, I appreciate your call. Bob, is there a reason that food for delivery has to be super plastic packaged?
Absolutely not. At Boston Consulting Group, we're working with a lot of different companies who are still starting to use their same production lines, their same packaging, their same delivery mechanisms when the process that's required has changed tremendously. So we're working with companies to help them think through how do you change your packaging, because when it's going to be delivered in one Amazon box or it's going to be delivered through a Google Express delivery, you don't need the same kind of packaging as you would to be shelf-ready in the store to attract the consumer. So that'll eliminate, actually, I think it's a great question by the caller, and it's eliminate a lot of packaging that today is frankly unnecessary.
But it sounds in her experience, at least so far, it came pretty packaged. Ian in Atlanta, Georgia. Ian, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. I just wanted to touch on basically who this is actually going to benefit. I'm a big proponent of local farms and their reemergence. But you guys talk a lot about big food and how I feel like 99% of the options that we give people on a day-to-day basis, especially in urban areas, is unhealthy processed chain food places. And if this is really going to change Americans' diets, or if they're just going to be ordering, like you said, Domino's, paying more for the convenience, they're just going to order food that's already prepared, and maybe only a very small percentage is actually going to order fresh produce that they're going to actually cook somewhat healthy meals with, because I'm very concerned with the direction, Americans' health is going,
yeah.
given the fact that such a large percentage of what we offer them is food that does very, very little for their overall health.
Ian, you and a lot of other people, but this could just double down on that, or it could short-circuit it. Ian, thanks for your call. Bob, stand by in Dallas. I want to go to Austin, Texas for just a minute. Mason Arnold joins us, co-founder of Greenling Organic. It's an Austin-based service, lets you order online and get delivery from local organic farmers. Mason Arnold, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
So does this work just as well for you as it might for Walmart To Go or Google Express for the organic guy?
Yeah, it does. I don't think the delivery component necessarily affects the product being delivered. I think the big food companies have the most money to dabble in this before small food companies do.
Yeah.
But it's really just a channel. So if local organic producers can figure out how to use the channel effectively, then they have just as they're on. It's on more equal footing than, say, a traditional grocery store, the food is, because people are more empowered to be able to seek out what they want, whereas in a big store, the big money controls shelf space, and online ordering shelf space is not. Sorry.
So, Mason, how is what you're doing here different from CSAs, where I get my box of cabbages and carrots and potatoes delivered from a local garden?
It's we have one product that's a Meta CSA product where we work with a bunch of different farms, and it's whatever's fresh and in season. The big difference is that, you know, in the CSA, you're working directly with the farmer, and so you're buying whatever the farmer is growing, and so there's less power of the consumer to decide exactly what they're going to get. And so what we do is allow the consumer to decide what they want and give that positive feedback loop. And because we do work with so many local farms, we're able to give that feedback and say, okay, let's, you know, at least in Texas, okra and eggplant are so plentiful during the summer, but people can get enough of it. And we allow the farmers to then grow things that are unusual and still give them an outlet for that.
So the web kind of making it possible to orchestrate maybe a richer buffet of local, organic, fresh food there. Mason, stand by in Austin, Texas. Meg Major joins us from Pittsburgh. She's chief content editor at Progressive Grocer, monthly trade magazine, food retailers, covers technology, consumer purchasing patterns. Meg Major in Pittsburgh, thanks very much for being here.
Thanks for the invitation, Tom.
Is this the death knell for supermarkets, Meg? It's all going to be delivered organic and otherwise.
Well, I don't think so. I think e-grocery and the topics we're talking about, all in its infancy, and part of the evolution of the grocery industry that has continued to intensify in the past decade, unlike any other era.
I mean, I'm reading headlines here, though, that say, you know, supermarkets in trouble, that the old way isn't going to cut it. People, if they can get a lot delivered, and they're going to have all kinds of people competing to do that and do that at low cost. What is the impact on traditional grocery shopping, do you think, Meg?
Well, again, part of the evolution, you really touched on something very important, which is that everybody is now selling groceries. So take a look around at any, practically any store you walk in, from a closeout to a sporting goods store, there's always a set of food of some kind. As such, food is pretty much the great neutralizer for all retail formats because of the fact that we shop for groceries on average 2.8 times per week. You figure that there's plenty of opportunity for the e-commerce folks to jump in, do a fulfillment of non-perishables. To me, that seems like the most logical thing for things that are replenishment items. Toothpaste, as stated earlier, toilet paper, tissues, things that we really were maybe brand loyal to, but we don't have to physically go in, touch, feel. But food is very sensitive and a very important topic for most people. The food that, you know, we're serving our families, we don't really, you know, maybe don't want to leave to chance somebody else selecting the size of apples we want, et cetera.
I mean, Bob, the Instacart's got somebody else picking it off the shelf. Maybe that's great, or maybe it's like, well, wait a minute. If I want to pick up my own things. And then there was always the issue with groceries of where do you put the stuff when you deliver it? Lots of people are working. Does everybody have to have a, I don't know, a big cooler outside their door? Does that really work, Bob?
Yeah, it would be great if we could reconfigure the home to, you know, have essentially the drop box for everybody. And it will, over time, I'm assuming that will happen. But I think the biggest thing is that, as I said earlier, this is early days where people are still learning. And one of the things that will be happening over time is people will get more and more information about the individual consumer. You know, different people look at the same peach, and some people like it soft and some people like it hard. And those kinds of, you know, specific tastes will start to come into the apps, the shopping apps that connects with Instacart, so the Google Expresses or the Amazons, et cetera. So you're going to see a lot of further customization and tailorization. And, you know, at the end of the day, the ability to, you know, click on four or five different pictures to show what kind of ripeness you're looking for. And it'll be a learning system, right? Well, they'll start to learn what your individual preferences are. So that'll take a little bit of time for that to evolve.
What's your guess about how much goes this way? I mean, I guess I can see it. You don't have to go out for the toothpaste. But on the other hand, how much of one's life do you want to live online? I mean, part of the pleasure of living is smelling the produce section, walking past the flowers, is seeing what's new from the farm, Bob.
Well, today it's really only – in the U.S. it's only 1%. There are other geographies like in the U.K. or in Korea where it's significantly higher. But it varies also tremendously, as mentioned earlier, by category and also by geography. Some categories you're seeing 30%. In some cases, you know, diapers in Korea, it's 70%, for example. But you're also seeing a lot more in obviously, the dense metroplexes. So it's going to be a different experience depending upon where you live and what categories you're shopping. But at the end of the day, you know, people said before that we wouldn't have offices anymore once we had the internet and the ability for people to telecommute. But people continue to still go to offices. The same thing is going to happen with stores. People are going to continue to go to the store, but they're also going to change their lifestyle to fit the shopping experience.
Bob Black, please stand by in Dallas. Mason Arnold with Greenling Organic in Austin, Texas. Meg Major in Pittsburgh at Progressive Grocer. Listeners, what do you think? All this food delivery, is it appealing to you? No more slogging through the aisles? Or do you want to squeeze the peaches? This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about groceries and the accelerating push to deliver them all over fast. Amazon is getting in on it. Google's getting in on it. Fresh Direct, Walmart to go, all kinds of options here. Instacart, they'll just have somebody hop up, go into the supermarket, pick out what you've asked for, bring it right to you. The U.S. Postal Service getting involved here. Let's get our listeners in. Brian in Montreal, Canada, what do you think about all this food delivery? Same day, Brian.
Well, same day is not what it turns me on, but it is a reflection on my early days back in the Back to the Land movement. We actually, in West Coast Canada, connecting with West Coast initiatives in the States, built our own order remote systems for all the people who are heading way up into the back of beyond. And that has a lot to do with what was being done here. The difference, which I really want to emphasize, is that we were doing it on our own initiative. We were doing it maintaining strong communications between all the local order bases made up of local back to the land consumers.
Yeah.
That made all the difference in the world.
Well, what's the difference? The internet can tie people together. They could be the same communities of people, I assume, Brian, or not?
Big data is the difference. Big data is what these big, highly capitalized companies are going to depend on. First of all, the attraction for them of making food part of their process, it makes them more immune to economic cycles because people are going to buy food no matter whether the economy is good or bad.
So is that a good thing or a bad thing? Bob Black says they'll know right down to what kind of peaches you like, if you like them tart or sweet or soft or firm.
But the difference was back then in those days, and I hate to sound like an old fogey, we were trading among ourselves the good experiences, initiating new ideas in food, and also trading ideas about how our different communities lived. The biggest lack I see in this model is that I'm never going to be able to mix, rub shoulders, and have much idea about the other people, even in my own physical neighborhood, let alone in my own country or my own region.
Brian, let us pick it up right there. Mason Arnold, how about it? Are you trying to steal the lovely intimacy of rubbing shoulders at the food co-op, Mason?
I disagree. I think part of the, number one, there's obviously a whole other set of people that believe the internet is helping create more connections and bring people better together. What I'm seeing, though, is that it's easier to educate people online because they're able to shop when they have time for it. So they're able to learn more about the product. We post information about all the farms that they're coming from and let people make that connection just on their own time rather than making them go to the farmer's market to meet the farm. And as we know, lots of more and more intimate connections are being made online every day.
Evan, in Madison, Wisconsin. Evan, you're on. What do you think?
Well, I first of all, thanks for having me on, Tom.
Yeah, sure.
And I guess one of the issues that I have with this is an issue that I have with a lot of online shopping, and that's that it's just another piece of convenience that kind of takes away some of our chances to get activity into our day. For a lot of people, you know, just going to the store, pushing a grocery cart, especially for the elderly, that might be one of the only little bits of activity that they get during the day.
So now we don't even push the cart for the food that we eat. Yeah, I hear you. Evan, our time grows short here, but I take the concern. Let me get one more, and I'll take it to our panel. Kim in Murfreesboro, Tennessee. Kim, you're on.
Hi, Tom. I've got 3 points I'd like to make.
Yes.
I am a disabled student. I go to MTSU, and I live off campus in a senior complex.
Okay.
I see 3 benefits. Disabled, seniors, and students who live in dorms. Normally, we don't drive.
Yeah.
It's hard for us to get to the grocery store and get healthy food.
Yeah.
This is amazing. If the details could be worked out, that's great. But I do have one concern.
Yes.
I heard your mention on the cost of membership and that type of thing.
Mm-hmm.
Now, not counting students, but with seniors and the disabled, we live on a very tight income.
Yep.
Will there be any types of discounts offered to people when this is a need and not a convenience?
That's a great question. Bob Black, how about it? They're Amazon Fresh moving into Park Slope, where generally money is not an issue. But in a lot of places where the need is real, money will be an issue. Do you imagine special rates for those in, let's say, Kim's shoes?
I think there will be a wide variety of models. You know, you see a lot of models being tested right now, some that inflate the sales price a little bit, some that charge a delivery cost. I'm sure you'll see some that's starting to have discounts when they're making deliveries to senior citizen centers, et cetera, or dorms, as mentioned here. So you'll see a lot of different models because it's become a wild west in terms of commercialization. Everyone's looking for a different angle, a different bent on this. So I think there'll be a lot of different delivery models, but also a lot of different payment models in terms of how you, at the end of the day, pay for the cost of the real cost of the service.
Meg, what do you expect from Walmart here? They're just getting into this with Walmart To Go, but if they roll that out big, they've become an enormous food supplier in this country. What part of the market do you think they would go after? What role?
Well, I think probably the most obvious to me would be a click and pick model, whereby that's what a lot of grocers are now angling toward. In other words, giving shoppers the opportunity to select their groceries either on a mobile device or at their computers, and then going to the store in a designated lane or aisle or at a curb picking those groceries for a very nominal, affordable fee.
Oh, so it wouldn't necessarily be delivered to your home. It would simply be ready when you got to the store.
Correct. So Walmart is, you know, that to me, I'm not really sure how Walmart's model is going to shake out. But a lot of grocery stores right now are getting into exactly just the click and pick. So it's kind of the best of both worlds. I think we will see a greater emergence of that. With that, Tom, I would also kind of point out that the callers had a lot of great comments with regard to life stages mm-hmm. and need states. But I would also argue the point that supermarkets now serve as a community hub. So not only are consumers, you know, able to go to a supermarket, buy their typical order, but they're also able to go to a Starbucks, a mm-hmm. in-store cafe, a deli bakery, a bank, a post office, dry cleaners. So all the services that are akin to supermarkets now, it's not driving consumers away. It's actually giving them better reasons to go to supermarkets. Conversely, supermarkets around the country are building better mousetraps with their stores to help shoppers gain affinity with drive-through. We had our store design contest issue in July. Mm-hmm. Our store designs, some of the most impressive designs we have seen in the past couple of years, a drive-through lane to pick up prepared foods. So supermarkets, the things that they are standing out for now aren't just the things that can be bought anywhere or delivered, such as Tide, Cheerios,
yeah,
bread, coffee, etc.
I guess, I mean, the thing I love is the smell of all the herbs and all the produce and the feel and the light on it and all the rest. I mean, Mason, you can send me this organic and from a local farm, and that's great, but I kind of love being in the midst of the bounty of a good market, not a cellophane-wrapped, you know, neon fluorescent supermarket, Mason, but a good market. That's a lot to give up to have it just sitting in a box at my back door.
Well, and I love that, too, and I still go to the farmers markets and am a customer of Greenlane as well. The kind of when we look at the entirety of the food we eat, you love to be around the market, but you need to go there every day. And the answer for most people is probably not. And so, but we consume food every day. And in fact, the most perishable food, the produce and the herbs, they don't have a significant shelf life. So unless you're going to the market every day, which many cultures do, and there are communities trying to build that around the nation, which I think is great if they want to take the time for it. But it's all about where are we prioritizing activities for our time. And even the argument about being worried about activities because we used to push around the shopping cart. Now you have the opportunity to do something that's more fulfilling. You know, if you push around the shopping cart and that's your activity, but that's not actually what you love doing, you know, go for a walk around the lake or something. So to me, it's a new channel, and it's an opportunity for people to interact with their food differently and then use that time that used to be consumed by food for other things if they want.
Big wave of change maybe on the way here. A decade or two ago, the first Sprouts, but now all kinds of players, including Mason Arnold and his Greenling Organic out of Austin, Texas. They'll bring you local organic food delivered off the line, off the web. Mason, thanks very much for being with us today.
Thanks, Tom.
Meg Major at Progressive Grocer in Pittsburgh. Meg, thanks for your insights.
Thank you, Tom.
And Bob Black in Dallas, Texas at Boston Consulting Group. Thank you as well, Bob.
Thank you.
In a moment, a look at big food and drink, McDonald's and Coca-Cola reeling a little bit. This is On Point. Think soft drinks and you probably think Coca-Cola. Think fast food and the first name is McDonald's. Both are giants, long untouchable. But last week, both signaling real trouble as American food tastes and habits change. Shares of Coke down 6% after reporting lower revenue. McDonald's reported its worst monthly comparable sales decrease in the U.S. and Europe since early 2003. What is up with Coke and McDonald's? With me now from Louisville, Kentucky, is Alicia Kelso, Senior Editorial Director of Food at FastCasual.com, at WSRWeb.com, at PizzaMarketplace.com. You got a lot of .coms there, Alicia. She's had her eye on all of this and what it means. Alicia Kelso, welcome back to On Point. Thanks for being with us today.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Let's take them one at a time. Their troubles sound related, but let's start with Coke. What's the problem? Down 6% is a big deal. Their stock price, what's going on?
I actually think they're kind of similar, both companies. Mm-hmm. The big underlying issue is pretty simple, that consumers' tastes are changing. They are more sophisticated. They're craving healthier products, and soda has been dropping for about 10 years now. So the issue with Coke came up about a year ago, though. Now people are additionally concerned about artificial sweeteners in Diet Coke. So where they were worried about sugar and regular Coke years ago, now they're actually worried about the diet alternative as well. And the issue, if you look at Pepsi, they're not struggling as bad, but they have more, their portfolio is a little bit more diversified with snacks. So I think it's simple, a health perception.
But we thought, I guess we get that. Who thinks of Coke as a health drink? Nobody anymore. But we had the impression that Coca-Cola, the company, was, you know, moving like mad, trying to diversify, buying up every new juice company on the block. Does it mean that they're just not able to do that fast enough, or people don't? Somehow they're making the wrong choices. People are still drinking things for sort of fun and snack moments.
They are. It's just still a pretty small part of their company. What concerned me looking at Coke's quarterly report last week was the Share a Coke campaign did really, really well from a marketing standpoint, but it wasn't enough to offset the profit loss. So I think, more is needed to invest in the teas and the, maybe the mm-hmm. fizzled sodas, some craft stuff mm-hmm. that people are gravitating toward now. When you lose your big, when you're losing your big business and you can't regain footing from that, as they have done for years now with their flagship Coca-Cola product, then I think there needs to be a more aggressive push into other things. And I think one of their solutions that they're going for is a huge marketing shift. They just hired on a new chief marketing officer, replacing their CMO of 7 years. So we'll see if they hit on that marketing point to recover from this.
You think they can market their way back to getting people to drinking straight old Coca-Cola or something like it?
Or focusing more on their alternative products. I think too, we can't count out that Coke was hit with a class action suit for false advertising about their vitamin water. Somebody brought forth a suit saying that it was false advertising, claiming it was healthy, and that's still ongoing, I believe. But when you are relying on something to kind of fit the changing consumer preferences with vitamin water was a good idea to do that, but people are questioning the healthy value of vitamin water.
And I buy that once in a while. It sounds healthy. How could it not be healthy?
I know. I mean, we'll see what comes out of that.
Okay.
I think it's too early to say right now, but I think, once you are not getting that off the ground with your marketing, then you gotta look at something else. And they've got Honest Tea. All that other stuff is just such a small percentage of their business right now.
There was a time when Coke was so big, it would be hard to imagine it coming with a come down like this. What about McDonald's here? What's happening there, Alicia?
Well, McDonald's, I think there's just a confluence of issues that are affecting the business right now. And that they've been working against the company for probably 2 or 3 years. And the biggest one is food quality. I think they have a perception problem. And if you go to their Facebook page or you go to a comment section of any story that's related to McDonald's, they're so busy doing damage control. There's so much misperception out there. I think it started with the pink slime.
Yeah, that's not too good. Pink slime doesn't sound too great.
No.
No matter how you cook it.
From.
Yeah. Is this a generalized problem across hamburger chains, fast food hamburger chains, or is it McDonald's in particular that's been?
I think, you're number one, you wear the biggest target on your back. You've got 14,000 U.S. restaurants. I think, something else that's affecting McDonald's to its core is fierce competition. There's much more competition, both with fast casuals. And, you were talking earlier about, grocery delivery, convenience stores are stepping up their fresh food offerings. So all these things are kind of working against it. And I think McDonald's has kind of almost been you know, losing some market share at their breakfast day part, which has always been a sweet spot for them.
Can they evolve their way out of this? Can they, you know, put enough salads out there to survive?
I think it's going to be tricky because I think another thing that's kind of tripped up McDonald's in the past year or two is they've almost had some desperate menu launches, you know, Hail Marys to try and gain some footing back. But their menu is now so big and complex, it's actually frustrating franchisees, and you don't want to frustrate your franchise base.
What was it? What was an example of a desperate new offering?
We go back a year ago and think of the Mighty Wings. I mean, you know, it just seemed like a weird product for McDonald's. The price point was too high, and the CEO even said himself that the price point was too high, and the flavor profile was too spicy. So I think, you know, when you're adding so many menu items, I think the menu's been 70% bigger than it was 2 or 3 years ago.
Yep.
When you're adding that many menu items, it's going to complicate operations. It's going to slow the speed of service down. And, you know, when you're McDonald's, that's your game winner is speed of service.
Coke and a cheeseburger may be sliding into the rearview mirror of American life. Coca-Cola and McDonald's in trouble. Alicia Kelso, thanks so much for joining us. Always great to talk to you.
All right, thanks for having me.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.